surprised me the most was that, you know, when the DOJ and the DEA first said they've been doing this, a lot of people speculated, well, here's another example of kind of war on terror tactics that are being applied to domestic law enforcement. And it's actually the other way around, that this started 9.5 years before September 11th in George H.W. Bush's administration. And this was the blueprint for a lot of what NSA started doing after September 11th.
Well, Brad Heath, we'll link to your report, investigative reporter at USA Today. That does it for our broadcast. Happy birthday to David Prude. And we have a social media job opening, full-time social media producer. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berk, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkaff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Gezder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, live from Henry Ford College. It's local news and alternative views. And my name is Jay Koronick, and I'm station advisor here at WHFR-FM. Happy to have you listening today. We have a special guest in the studio. Major cultural events are going on here at Henry Ford Community College all the time. But this time, it's the Music Hall. Yes, back again from the theater department here at Henry Ford College. Hairspray is coming up, and we have Diane Mancinelli, who I've known for many, many years in different departments and through many different activities. But welcome to the Journal, Diane.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Nice to be here.
So if people haven't already seen, I know there's been a couple of stories in the Press and Guide and the Times Herald announcing the upcoming play. And, of course, advance tickets are already on sale, which is always a good idea. The musical is one of the most popular theater productions we do. Tell us basically about which was the choice and why you chose to do it.
Well, actually, it was thrust upon me.
Uh-oh.
I didn't really decide to do this. However, it's a very popular show even now. It's been, I think, off-Broadway for a while, but it had a long run, and it was very popular when it was on Broadway. And then there was a movie that came out with John Travolta really kind of stole the show with that one. And so we decided that this would be a really fun show to do. It's also a musical comedy. So
right. Comedies are always fun, of course. And it's a big production because there is acting and music and singing and dancing, too. And that's where you come in this time because, of course, you've been our premier. Well, you basically developed the whole music program here. It may have been here before you came a little
Not
bit.
Not music
was it?
Program, dance program.
I mean,
program.
Dance program.
Yes, absolutely. There were a few classes on the books, and that's about it.
You pulled
it
all together, and then you involved it through the years with, besides doing your own recitals and presentations, but also involved it with the musical at times, too, when
that's
it was appropriate.
Right. That's right. This is my 10th musical at
Oh, is
college.
That all?
Yes.
Oh, well, keep trying until you get it right. You know,
I will.
No. We're always trying to do better, of course. This should be a lot of fun, and it involves a lot of people too, doesn't it?
It does. It's a pretty big cast. I haven't really counted, but I think there's somewhere between 30 and 40 cast members, and a lot of leads. It's a really complicated show to do. There's 20 some odd musical numbers, and the musical numbers are very involved with not just lyric, but also dialogue, so there's a lot of underscoring, and then dance with almost every one of the musical numbers.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, directed by Mary F. Bremer Beer. Mary has been directing many of our productions for a lot of years, as well as throughout the community, too. Technical Theater. Technical details, Jerry Jablonski.
Jerry Jablonski is our technical director, yeah. Yes, and he's excellent.
And the music this time, is it live performance?
It is, and Kevin Dewey is our musical director,
well,
and he's also excellent. We have all veterans doing this show, so we're as directors, and so it's really, really fun. I feel very honored and very privileged and happy to be working with these folks.
It's quite a group of great talent. And of course, Kevin is our vocal director here at Henry Ford College and head of several groups, Renaissance Voices, and throughout the community and performing all the time. So he's doing both the instrumental part and coordinating
the vocals,
and advising
yes.
the singers too.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. So still a few weeks ahead, folks, but I'll go through the dates. I'm looking at them now. It starts Friday, April 24th at 8 p.m. That's the big kickoff. And then Saturday at 8 p.m. Sunday. It's basically two weekends then. Friday through Sunday. Sunday is always at 2 p.m. Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. There are a couple of matinees, which is a little bit unusual, but a great idea.
They're sold out.
Oh, well.
To schools.
Then we can't mention them other than that's a great thing to do.
Yeah.
I know that there's always a children's theater production in the fall that they do matinees for. That does really well with ticket sales. But, that's a tremendous experience for the kids. And the length of the play, though, for the matinees is the same, though. It's the same.
I'm not sure if it's a shortened version or not. That is an artistic director question. I want to make...
Because the kids might get out of school for a whole
hours
this way.
I want to make clear, though, that the matinee performances, which are Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, April 27th, 29th, and May 1st, are for schools. But the other matinees, the Sunday, the last weekend in April and the first weekend in May, those Sundays are not sold out, and those are 2 o'clock performances in case folks can't make it to the evening performances.
So for a big production like this, the general admission price is $15 a person, but there are discounts. HFC faculty, staff, and seniors, $12 a person. Students with ID, $10.
That's right.
Okay. And I think the great news here is because the productions are so popular, like Dinosaurus last year, that you really do have to get your tickets in advance, folks. And the website is theater, spelled T-R-E, because we have a fancy theater. It is T-R-E, Le Théâtre. That's where that spelling came from. Came from French, by the way, folks. But the classy theaters are all spelled T-R-E at the end. So theater, T-R-E, at the end, .hfcc.edu. And then there's a buy tickets link right there, and I'm sure they take a variety of charge cards for that. That's the way to do it. For more information, would you suggest they try to contact
Dr. Popovich?
Dr. Popovich, George Popovich, the Educator of the Year Award went to him this year in Dearborn. And
very proud of that.
Yep. And so, and you can look up his name, Popovich, when you get to the Henry Ford College website, if you'd like to get in touch directly. It's probably something like G. Popovich, but I'm not sure, at hfcc.edu. The point is, you should know about the play. You've heard about it for years. It's a tremendous amount of fun. I think, was it John Waters directed the movie.
I'm not sure who directed the movie.
It's a wild and crazy movie. Anyway,
but I don't.
Right.
Yeah.
But so it's been out there, folks. But this production with our best people, including Diane Mancinelli, who's joining us today here.
Thank you.
Doing the choreography part, and Kevin Dewey and Jerry Jablonski and Mary Bremer Beer. I'm probably forgetting a few other people. Makeup, costumes, do you remember their names?
Costumes, Judy Fletcher,
okay,
who's also a veteran
right. And
has been working here for many years. And then Scott Ross, who is our lighting designer, does a really wonderful job with that as well.
Mm. And this is in the Adrey Auditorium, folks, not in the Ford, Community and Performing Arts Center, but right here on campus, the Adrey Auditorium, as we call it, and our Fine Arts Center here on our main campus, 5101 Evergreen Road. It's a really good acoustics, nice-sized theater, about 450, I think, capacity, and it's really designed for great productions like this. New sound system a couple years ago, so... this is going to be fantastic, folks. So it's definitely a way to bring in spring and have a fun time. Would you recommend it for younger ages too?
I would. There's a lot of
there's a lot of silliness about sexiness.
Yes, that's right. There's a lot of sexual innuendos, and there's you know, deals with the lots of bigotries that were quite prevalent in the 1960s. This took place in 1962. And so a lot of that will go over their heads, depending upon their age.
That's good. But I assume even broadcast TV might be a lot more risque than this.
Oh, that's for sure. You know, that is for sure.
Even broadcast TV. I didn't even say cable TV.
That's right.
You know, but, yeah. So I think it could be fun for the whole family. But use discretion for kids. Well, who am I to say? For your kids, however advanced you think they are. It's some innuendo there, as Diane said. How's the dance program doing, on a side note today?
Pretty well. We have a new artistic director of the dance company, the HFC Full Circle Dance Company.
I know, and you've expanded and brought in new people. Yep,
and yeah. She is she's an adjunct. Her name is Amy Gilmet. She does a wonderful job. So she'll be bringing into the Adre also our dance concert after Hairspray is struck. Yes,
so it'll be just shortly after the end of this so-called winter semester. It'll be mid-May.
That's
you think?
Right. Or yes,
end of May. Okay, mm-hmm. We'll look forward to that too. What and just a extra plug for the dance program. How many classes basically, and what kinds of dance is taught?
Well, we offer various levels of modern dance and ballet and jazz. And a beginning tap class. I teach regularly a beginning choreography class.
Ah, that's special.
And yeah. And then we have our dance company, and that is by audition only. Mm-hmm. So there's a nice variety of classes to choose from.
And some are just for beginners.
And some are for, right. they're mostly for beginners. Oh, okay. And so people who have never, ever had a dance class, great place to start would be a ballet class. Just like with vocal music performance, if you've never sung before, one would start with classical, and so it's the same thing with dance.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think I'm probably over the age, but
not never.
A little bit more stretching and movement would be good for anyone.
It's
I know,
great.
But,
it's yeah. great. Yeah, there's some great physicality that goes along, and it's also wonderful for the soul.
Hmm. We all need more soul. Well, Diane Mazzanetti, thank you for coming. We'll keep promoting this. Next week is our pledge week here at WHFR. So, unfortunately, we talk a lot about ourselves on the air, but we'll get a spot recorded for this and repeat that frequently. But the way it's going, folks, you better get your tickets in advance for the date that's right for you. Again, this is the last weekend of April, April 24th, 25th, and the 26th, Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 2, and then the first weekend in May, May 1st and 2nd, those are Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m., and again, Sunday, May 3rd at 2 p.m., those are the last, that's the last performance, so only six performances, and this is just going to be a great ensemble production
it
with
is.
All
it's
of our
talent.
It is,
a great show, lots of talent. Vocals are great, the dance and the choreography is magnificent, of course.
If you say so, because
And okay. The artistic director does a wonderful job. She has been at this for decades. And
there
so
you go.
She's wonderful. It's very funny. Very fun show to see.
And you've obviously had a lot of fun so far just working
sure
on
have.
It, getting it together. Yeah. So that theater website where you need to go to get the tickets to make sure you get one is theater, spelled T-R-E at the end, .hfcc.edu, and then click on the Buy Tickets link there. Hairspray here at Henry Ford College Adre Auditorium coming up last weekend in April, first weekend in May. Diane Mazzanetti, thanks so much for being on the Journal today. We'll keep continuing to get the word out.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, we're going to take some commentaries here from Jim Hightower and get into some local news coming up next on the new WHFR Journal.
Rated by, of all things, bad times. Tens of millions of Americans have been knocked down and held down in recent years by the collapse of jobs and wages. This calamity has led to a second blow for millions of the same families, who now find themselves buried in overdue bills for credit card charges, student loans, and other consumer debt. But there's a bright silver lining in that dark financial cloud. Only, it's not for the indebted families, but for a booming breed of finance hucksters known as consumer debt buyers. Believe it or not, in the warped world of high finance, there's gold in them thar hills of bad debt. Such miners of human misery as Encore Capital Group buy bales of unpaid bills from banks and other lenders, paying pennies on the dollar. Then, they unleash packs of their hard-nosed, aggressive collectors on the families. If they still can't extract payment, the debt profiteers turn to their meanest dog, the courts. Debt firms routinely file thousands of lawsuits a day against financially devastated Americans. They know that most debtors can't understand the legal gibberish in the suits, can't afford a lawyer, and can't mount an effective defense against the corporate lawyers. So, some 95% of these lawsuits produce default judgments against hapless borrowers, meaning debt buyers can then confiscate the wages of borrowers or freeze their bank accounts. This is Jim Hightower saying, this boom in vulture capitalism is disgusting. But worse, it's subsidized by us taxpayers. We pay for that judicial system, the judges, courtrooms, and endless rounds of hearings. Predatory debt corporations have perverted our so-called justice system into their own subsidiary for squeezing profits out of destitute debtors. Come one, come all. Step right up and buy your ticket for a ride on the splendiferous, phantasmagoric, supersonic, miraculous, trans-Pacific partnership. TPP is not some sort of futuristic flying machine, but yet another global trade scam coming at us like a volcanic eruption straight out of hell. This thing is a partnership of, by, and for global corporations, similar to NAFTA, only much, much, much bigger and far more destructive, both to the middle class and to our people's sovereignty. Negotiating in strict secrecy during the past 7 years, a cabal of the Obama White House and corporate lobbyists are now ready to spring it on us, and Republican leaders intend to ram it into law before we, the people, can get a whiff of its anti-democratic stench. Indeed, to perfume it, they've already begun a PR campaign touting TPP as the long-sought wonder cure for America's downtrodden working class. For example, such odd bedfellow boosters as Secretary of State John Kerry and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce both exclaim that the 12-nation scheme will, quote, support 650,000 new jobs. Wow, really? No. In January, the Washington Post fact-checker column dug into that number and found that it was miscalculated and misleading. In fact, the columnist found that, quote, the correct number is zero. He also pointed out that even if 650,000 jobs were created, that's not even a drop in the bucket, for it would increase U.S. employment by less than one-half of 1%. This is Jim Hightower saying, be alert, friends, for the TPP gang will try to dazzle us with hokey numbers and neon lies while they turn our future well-being over to global corporations. To get information and get involved, go to citizen.org/trade.
This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, April the 10th, 2015. Jay Koronek with you for the hour. All kinds of different stories coming up here this week. A couple of breaking stories, in fact, but we'll get to them sort of like in chronological order. I hate to do them first because then maybe you say, well, that was the big stories. I can tune out. I don't have to listen to the rest. Well, just like newspaper stories, if you read a newspaper, the first couple lines, you get the gist of it, as they say, the basics, but you won't know in detail what's really happening or what could happen in the future because of that event. So you really need to read the important stories all the way through. You need to listen to this show all the way through. And if you don't have time today, remember, the show is always podcast. There is a podcast, an archive on our website, whfr.fm, where you can go anytime after broadcast to listen to the show of that day. And in fact, just click on talk shows and then click on the WHFR button and then choose the date. And today, of course, April 10th, 2015. We're going to have a little discussion here. Several topics have come up, and I have access to some information about Proposal 1. Again, May 5th, coming up quickly, only a couple weeks away. That's the election, special election at taxpayers' expense, to consider a raise of the sales tax in Michigan from 6% to 7%. That would pay mostly for repairing our roads somewhat, and some money go to schools and mass transit and some municipal monies going to the cities and things like that. And it's very controversial. I thought the best thing I've read so far analyzing it, and I'm talking about analysis, not just taking an opinion, oh, I'm for it, I'm against it, you know, yeah, vote yes, vote no, is Craig Ferrant. And last Sunday in the Dearborn Press and Guide, he wrote his what they call op-ed. In other words, it's his opinion, not necessarily those of anyone else at the Press and Guide. And, of course, this show, yeah, the new WHFR Journal. Just want to say that all the opinions expressed during this hour are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, administrators, or students. But we do thank them for their support, and we do try to be fair, as we know it at the time. And, of course, if you listen to the show regularly, you know every couple of weeks, sometimes more frequently than that, I make corrections on things that we misspoke about or got wrong. And always happy to do that so that our continuing listeners, at least, don't have a problem. I guess, since I've already introduced it, and I don't have to reintroduce it, here's what Craig Ferrant says about Proposition 1. Now, I was expecting another comment from him this Wednesday, and nothing. He did not have an article about this, but maybe this coming Sunday's edition of the Dearborn Press and Guide will have his follow-up, because he's got more than one opinion here. So this is what he says. Now it's time to take on the proposed second largest shift in our state's tax structure since the $1.7 billion welfare check to Michigan's slice of corporate America, if you remember what that was. Anyway. It's Proposal 1, he says, which will appear on the May 5th ballot 1 month from today, which was last Sunday, of course, but the election is on a Tuesday, you know that, right? He says, this proposal, among others, will constitutionally raise our sales tax by nearly 17%. That's from 6 to 7%. That is a 17% increase. When you look at it that way, it sounds like a big deal, doesn't it? The second largest increase, by the way, since 1994's Proposal A increased it by 50%. In fact, how many of you can even remember where our state sales tax was 4 cents on the dollar? Craig goes on to say, but the 17% hike in the sales tax, a regressive tax that hits the working poor and the poor the hardest, is only one thing Proposal 1 will do. Of course, if the poor are so poor that they don't have a car and they don't buy gasoline for it, then it won't matter to them at all, will it? No. So that's the answer for the poor. Forget about transportation. Try to find a bus somewhere. Well, anyway, that was my little insert. He went on to say, well, this is a regressive tax. He says, what about for the rest of the people? He says, well, let's just say that kindergartners couldn't have drawn up a bigger mess during finger painting class. That's what he thinks of Proposal 1. Now, it doesn't say he's for it or against it, but it's a big mess. Truly a Rube Goldberg-level bit of legislative bait and switch, Proposal 1 aims to solve everything and instead sets the stage for great disappointments across the board. So although I'm going to spend a few columns on this, it deserves it, let's start with the obvious, shall we? According to the State House Fiscal Agency, if Proposal 1 passes, the increased tax on fuel sales should raise an extra $1.3 billion for our roads in fiscal year 2018 and every year after that. Note that it says fiscal year 2018. Because, he goes on to say, for the first 2 years of the law's implementation, hardly any of the new money will be used to fix our roads at all. Did you know that? It will be used to pay off past road debt. Oh, here's an aside, by the way, folks. I went to my car dealer last week, and they did a general inspection and oil change. They found that one of my tires was bulged, had a bulge in it. That comes from hitting a pothole. And, of course, that bulge expands out to the side, and it will explode at some point, and you'll lose the tire. So you've got to replace the tire. Well, okay, that set me back a couple $100. And this morning, just because last night I was driving home, gee whiz, I could say other words, but gee whiz, I hit another pothole. Okay? And this morning I go out, and a tire that's not the new one now has a bulge and will have to be replaced. So, again, this proposal won't fix anything about the roads, even if passed, until 2018. So you got another 3 years, well, 2.5 from May 5th, approximately 2.5, before any money will go to fix the roads. Can you wait that long? That's what your legislators did in writing this. The first 2 years, though, they're going to pay off past road debt. Yeah, they actually borrowed against the road fund in the past. And so that's $865 million they got to pay off in 2016 and $470 million the rest of it in 2017. So if you think that these potholes will disappear by this fall, if you vote yes, you'll be wrong. No additional funds will be available beyond what already was appropriated in the 2014-15 fiscal budget. And the next budget year doesn't start until October. So grab your checkbook, he says. You're going to be paying for car and truck tire and suspension repairs for years to come, like yours truly. But it didn't have to be this way, he says, which is the core of my arguments going forward. Our legislature, which has now made the most compelling argument ever for becoming a part-time institution, could have structured a method by which more money could have been available now, the start of the construction season. But lawmakers didn't. We could have witnessed roads and bridges being repaired this spring and summer at a rate not seen for decades. But lawmakers didn't do that. Instead, they created this nonsensical band-aid that doesn't even begin to aggressively deal with the problems for another 2 years. And he calls that really brilliant, and I'm sure that should be in quotes. But this kind of bait-and-switch incompetence is matched by similar flaws in this proposal. For example, he goes on to say, as is often the case with crystal gazing, estimates of future revenues ignore the other side of the equation. Our country has been on an ever more successful energy conservation track. This means not only are our cars and trucks becoming more energy efficient, but also more consumers are opting for electric and hybrid vehicles. Put the two together and you've got a society moving away from the gas gluttony of the past, which means the revenues projected for even 3 years from now are going to be wrong. You want to know how wrong? Consider this. In 1978, he says that's the year he started at the old Mellis newspapers, the National Corporate Fuel Efficiency Standards for cars was 18 miles to a gallon. Today, that's the acronym is CAFE, C-A-F-E, is 35.7 miles per gallon, which is a 98% increase in fuel efficiency. Too much of a spread? Then how about since year 2000? When CAFE was 27.5 miles per gallon versus that 35.7 today, a 30% increase in fuel efficiency. And none of this includes the impact of hybrids and pure electrics. Now, if approved, Proposal 1 would trigger related legislation that would remove the sales tax on fuel and remove the current 19 cent per gallon tax on gas, 15 cents on diesel, and replace both with a 41.7 cent per gallon gas tax that would increase with inflation. Okay, but inflation is essentially flat right now, and the Fed has every intention of keeping it that way. And we're getting more fuel efficient, not less so, which means that this is an unsustainable business model, which means shortly after this law finally starts producing billions in revenue for our roads instead of paying off debts, it will be woefully short of what we'll need to do the repairs. And keep in mind that costs will continue to climb each year to do those repairs. So the best approach would be have to been to plan to raise the money this year and spend it this year. So prepare yourself for the day when Lansing will have to raise that tax rate again beyond an inflation rate in order to keep pace with road and bridge repairs in the future. Like I said, says Craig Ferrand, I've been waiting to take on this so-called plan to fix our roads and bridges. So stay tuned for more in my next column. All right. Jack Lessenberry at the Metro Times and with Michigan Radio has taken on this issue several times himself. And so he had a conversation, which I'm going to let you hear now, on Michigan Radio with their Emily Fox about this. It was just 2 days ago. And again, we can use it because Michigan Radio puts this on their website for free for anyone to listen to. And it's a great news resource, michiganradio.org.
Well, Jack, we are a month away from the big vote to raise the state's sales tax from 6 to 7% to fund roads. Polls are showing that voters are not getting behind this ballot proposal. What does the Yes Vote campaign have to do in the coming weeks in order to stand a chance?
Well, I think they have to identify people and get them out to vote. Part of the problem with polling in this thing is the turnout's likely to be very small, and we don't know who's really going to vote. But it seems clear people don't, they're not really sold that this will do what's needed to be done. There are some people who think that the money can be found there with existing revenue, which is just nonsense. There are some people who don't like the sales tax, some people who don't like the other things the bill would do, and there are some who think that if they reject this bill, the legislature will fix the roads, but there's a lot of evidence that all of that is not true, and as the governor says, there's no plan B. Either the voters vote yes for this, or the roads will just continue to deteriorate for the foreseeable future.
How much do you think of this opposition to this ballot proposal to fund roads has to do with voters not trusting the government or not wanting to have to the final say on something lawmakers should have decided on in the first place?
Well, I'm not sure that people are really thinking in that detail, but there is this huge mentality for the last 35 years in America that all taxes are bad, that we're overtaxed, and voters are very reluctant, they've historically been very reluctant, to increase their own taxes. People talk about Proposal A when they indeed raise the sales tax for the schools, but people sometimes forget that had they not done that, there was sort of a poison pill. The legislature would have got the money through raising their income tax. So it was really one thing or the other, whereas here they sort of vote yes or no, and voters are, again, very reluctant to raise their own taxes.
But also, what about this issue of just a ballot proposal in general? I mean, during the November 2012 election, Michigan voters were faced with six ballot questions. And do you think that sense of confusion is also stemming opposition to the current road funding question?
Well, they voted no on all of them. There's sort of a rule of thumb that if you put more than three things in the ballot, people don't even try to understand them. They vote no on everything. And voters, and there's some common sense to this, tend to vote no on things they don't understand. This is the most complicated and confusing ballot proposal I've ever read. You can't tell what it means from reading it. And I think a lot of people may get in the booth and just say, I don't understand this. I'm voting no. On the other hand, turnout is likely to be very, very small. People aren't used to voting on May the 5th. There's not a lot of other issues on the ballot. There's some local issues in some places, but most people think the turnout will be microscopic, maybe 10 to 15%. The question is, will people who have a stake in this in fixing the roads and other constituencies, poor people, you would think the working poor ought to vote for this because it restores their earned income tax credit. It gives some money to the schools. It gives some money to local governments, to mass transit even. Will those people vote, or will the people just turn out who tend to vote no on anything, especially a money issue? And in the past, it's been the latter group, the naysayers, who tend to vote.
So the big question is what happens if people do vote no for this road funding proposal? What happens next?
The roads continue to fall apart. This legislature is even more conservative, even more unwilling to raise taxes than the one that failed to fix the roads that went out of office at the end of December. All they would do is put this ballot proposal on the ballot. And politically, if the voters have said no to tax increases, it's almost impossible for the legislature to then enact tax increases over the voters. So my guess is that if this is turned down, road funding is dead in the water, and that's really a tragedy for Michigan. It's good. They estimate it would cost $2.1 billion a year for the foreseeable future, a decade anyway, to fix the roads. And the longer you wait, the more the cost goes up as they continue to fall apart.
Well, I'm curious to see what you have to say a month from now when we get the results. Thanks so much, Jack.
My pleasure.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's political analyst.
And by the way, I happen to be a contributor. I'm a supporter of Michigan Radio. It's a great news service. I also support on a regular basis WDET, and they're in their pledge drive. They just started their 10-day pledge drive this year. And our pledge drive at WHFR, our annual, once-a-year-only pledge drive, is starting this Sunday, April 12th, and going on through the following Saturday, April 18th. I'm not going to make a pledge pitch now, but we need support, just like these other very noble, independent, that's right, non-commercial entities, media. Because where are you going to get anything close to the truth except from an independent, non-commercial source? I mean, that's a rhetorical question. You may have a good answer. I don't know any good answer other than the three that I just pointed out. The station to which you are now listening, WHFR.FM, is supported by a small stipend each year from Henry Ford College, which does not come from the general fund, but from the student service fee, which also helps the theater program to a similar amount and provides the base amount of money, the basic amount for their productions. But they can't survive on that alone, and we can't survive on what they give us. It's the real world, folks. And so we raise 60% of our operating funds ourselves, even though we're an all-volunteer student staff, with the exception of myself and two others who are part-time working for the college as so-called management, if you will. So this show wouldn't be possible without the station, and the station's not possible without that independence. And the fact that if we had to ask for commercials, we would do different kinds of programming because we don't want to make any of our advertisers mad at us, you see? And we would have to get the highest possible ratings in order to get more dollars in. We don't care about ratings. We want everybody to listen, of course. We don't care about ratings. So if you're interested in getting started and you're already going to your computer or your tablet or your smartphone to get those tickets for Hairspray at Theater, TRE Theater, .hfcc.edu. You can go to our website, whfr.fm. Our Radiothon 2015 link is right there in the center of the page. You can make a donation right there. Our pledge incentives are all listed. And you can get tickets for our big gala event, our 30th anniversary gala event, which will be at Park Place a week from tomorrow. And that's going to be great fun and entertainment, food, dancing, 6 to 11 p.m. You can find out about that also at our website, whfr.fm. Support your local, all your local, independent, non-commercial media, because they're the ones you can trust. And if we get it wrong, we're happy to admit it's wrong. And we don't have a bias that comes from pressure from either politicians or from advertisers. Think about it. It makes a big difference. So proposal one. We'll get back to that when Craig Foran writes his second column. I assume that'll appear this coming Sunday in the Press and Guide. From last Sunday's Press and Guide, Michael Albano, he's our Dearborn booster. Almost every op-ed piece that he writes talks about something fantastic or everything that's fantastic about Dearborn, and rightly so. A lot of good things going on here. A lot of things that need to be improved and changed, which he probably would admit, but not in his articles. But this one he writes for a cause that's near and dear to my heart: help support the firefighters' burn raffle. They're actually going to pick the winners on April 28th, and you can buy tickets for this raffle at any fire department, I believe, in Dearborn or Melvindale, because Melvindale and Dearborn are merged together, okay? Only 1,500 tickets will be sold, though, by the way, maximum. And the first prize is $40,000 or a brand new Camaro. Now, for many years, people were just taking the $40,000, I know. But apparently, so the last couple of years, I talked to the fire one of the fire officers, firefighters, thank you very much, a couple weeks ago when I got my ticket, and he said, no, last year at least, they took the Camaro. So I guess Camaros are catching on in Ford country. did you hear that there's going to be an introduction of the 2016 new model of Chevy Camaro, and they're doing it on Belle Isle on May 16th? Imagine, that's Belle Isle, and off Detroit there. But don't try to get tickets to at that event now. It was sold out in 3 hours online. There's that online thing again. So again, theater, T-R-E, .hfcc.edu for Hairspray tickets, whfr.fm for tickets to our gala or donations, and forget about the Camaro website, because that's not going to happen. But I wanted to say thank you, General Motors, for thinking of Michigan. And there will be international attention given to Belle Isle, beautiful island, and because of this product introduction. Of course, we do usually have an international car race there, too, at least once a year. I think that's going to come back again this year. So we'll get some more attention for that. But remember, Belle Isle's now under state control. Yes. Mindy Delano actually has an op-ed, but it's a very nice one, and they gave her a full page with pictures and a poem on page D1, section D, last Sunday's Press and Guide. She says, "Celebrate Arbor Day." And she said it all starts with J. Sterling Morton, and the year was 1872. He proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that the planting of trees was an event worthy of a special designated day. The holiday became known as Arbor Day. It became official, and it's observed in April, usually the last Friday. Because of region and climate in some states, it may differ. In Michigan this year, it's celebrated on April 24th, 2 days after Earth Day. That's right. April 22nd is Earth Day across the whole U.S. And trees are a significant part of the ecology on this planet, by the way, folks. And I just want to tell you that who Mindy Delano is, a cute article, cute pictures here, several different types of trees in different locations. Good selection for that, and color, oh my goodness. But Mindy Delano, in case you don't know her, is a lifelong gardener and foodie, horticultural chair and treasurer of the Garden Club of Dearborn. The next meeting of the club is Monday at First Presbyterian Church. Of course, that was last Monday, folks. That's the problem with these papers. But anyway, 600 North Brady. The program has a speaker, too, this time. And their speaker was talking, or Glenda Albright gave a talk about miniature gardening. But if you want more information about the Garden Club of Dearborn, you can probably go to Dearborn Community Arts Council. I bet they're a member of that. But you can also call this phone number right here in the area code 313. So Garden Club of Dearborn, if you'd like to be a member, very informative, informational. 313, the number is 274-8930. And that stuck out in my head because our frequency on the FM dial is 89.3 or 89.30. We don't usually talk about the zero. Although we do this year because we're 30 years old. 30 years and just getting started. So our new bumper stickers, our new stickers, you can put them wherever you want to, of course, but not against some without someone else's permission on their property. It says 89.30. You get it? Because it's our 30th year. And it is 89.30. It's just we don't usually say 30. Just say 0.3. But it's the same thing. So their phone number for the Garden Club of Dearborn is 313-274-8930. And I don't usually read poetry on the air, but here it goes. Joyce Kilmer's poem, Trees. I think that I shall never see a poem as lovely as a tree. A tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the sweet earth's flowing breast. A tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray. A tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair, upon whose bosom snow has lain, who intimately lives with rain. Poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. I know it's a little sappy, but... Uh-oh, did I make a pun? Oh, I'm sorry. Moving on. Dearborn Times Herald indicates in a story that's unique to them, however, that the Signing for Safety students are going to be able to finish their program despite the program cuts. And here's the story from Zinab Najim in the Times Herald from this last Wednesday. Student and teachers at Dearborn High School are working together to bring more attention to their Signing for Safety project for the hearing impaired. DHS teacher Lori Baker explained the project at the March 9th Dearborn Public Schools Board of Education meeting. The project is aimed at teaching police departments basic sign language skills and how to recognize a deaf person. Baker said, "We decided that we have power over our environment and wanted to make a difference for all deaf and hard of hearing people." Unquote. A few weeks after the presentation at the board meeting, Dearborn Public Schools announced the current school year would be the last for their... continued on page 8A, hearing impaired program, or program for the hearing impaired, or about hearing impaired problems. The hearing impaired students currently in the Signing for Safety project will not be affected by the elimination of the program. However, there will be no new students allowed to join the program. Baker said, "I have 5 juniors and 5 sophomores, and they will all be able to graduate through the program." Baker explained that she used news articles to find stories that will create a personal connection with her students. During her search earlier this year, she came across an article about a man in California who was tased by the police. That's electronic zapping thing. He was zapped. But anyway, tased is the official word. The man used sign language to communicate with police, but had no success stopping the tasing. They mistyped that as tasting from happening. I don't think the police tasted him after they zapped him. No, I don't think so, but that's a funny little typo, isn't it? This got Baker and the students interested in doing more research about similar incidents. They found four other cases involving police assaulting deaf people because they didn't understand sign language. On March 16th, Detroit Police Officer Eric Peterson visited the students to learn about the sign language culture and also teach them how to keep themselves safe. He was very impressed by the students, Baker said. Baker said her students wanted to see the communication between the hearing impaired improve to make for a safer environment. Now, that's something yours truly is going to say that probably should be suggested for training of all police officers, at least a basic course in sign language. So there's no misunderstanding. Hey, tell me your name. Why won't you speak up? I can't hear you. Get out of that car. Lay down on the ground. Why don't you do what I tell you? I'm just making this up, folks, but imagine if somebody is deaf, if they are hearing impaired. Now, some of these people can read lips moving, but they have to be able to see the lips, and others have not gotten that skill together yet. And so they don't necessarily recognize what the person is saying, the officer, let's say in this case, when the lips are moving. So yes, there's definitely a problem there. I wouldn't want to say it was a problem in any of these other incidents where police have well overreacted people that they have apprehended or stopped for one reason or another, which resulted in shootings. The most recent one in, of course, Inkster, that's been reported nationally, and that's, I'm not making any comments about all those situations because I don't know enough. One of the things I did hear someone say on National Public Radio, of course, in a very formal way, is it would be great not just, and I said this a week or so ago on the air, the body cameras or the cameras that are in the police cars that record these incidents are all fine, but without the audio portion, we don't know who said what when. Okay, was there provocation? Was there misunderstanding? What was going on? Without the audio, and audio is not easy to record from a distance, folks. Okay, camera can see from a distance, and then later they can blow it up. But sound, unless you have the microphone relatively close or a very, very expensive special microphone pointed at exactly the person's mouth from 20 feet away, you're not going to be able to hear what they say because the background noise of the environment, like if you're outdoors on a highway or something, is so loud they can't easily process the voice out of that. They can try. They've got tools. They got digital editing, but it's not like enlarging maybe a video picture to see some detail. But even there, when the picture gets bigger in video, it gets less and less clear. So problems in both cases. But this is something I commend the Dearborn Public Schools for the program. But, of course, all of the hearing-impaired instructional program is ending in Dearborn. And so there you go. But at least this program to work with the police officers and the hearing-impaired to try to spread the word about communicating with them. There's also a program that was reported in the other papers, also on 1A here. Where is it? Elected officials support Take on Hate campaign. City officials joined together March 31st to publicly endorse Take on Hate, a national campaign to address bias and discrimination towards any group of people, and particularly towards Arab Americans. Okay, and there was comments from Council President Susan DeBaggia, Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr., who's going to be on this show next Friday. That's the show next Friday. As soon as he can get here, I think he's got a luncheon. He's going to get here as quickly as he can. Might be here a few minutes after 1 o'clock. But Mayor O'Reilly will be talking about State of the City address and other issues that have come up since then and other things that you've suggested to me by sending me an email at whfr@hfcc.edu. Put in the subject line question for the mayor or something, it'll get to me, and but it may already be on my list. It's really a great time because he's got a lot of answers. Yeah, he does, and he knows a lot. So this is the time to tune in or catch the podcast for next Friday, April 17th show of the new WHFR Journal. That's from 1 to 2 p.m. or, of course, on our website. So I like the Take on Hate message. I think that's great. And in general, it should spread everywhere. The problem I have is, and where is that paper now? Okay. Okay, is it's just an oversight probably, but Wayne County Commissioner Gary Warrenchuk said the principles of, this is a direct quote, the principles of Take on Hate apply universally to all groups, with the message being that we oppose discrimination and bias against all people that is based on their religion or ethnic heritage. Well, that's fine, Gary. That's right. But is that all the Take on Hate is about? What about people that hate people because of their sexual preference? LGBT community. What about the discrimination against them? They're certainly hated by many people for different reasons at different times. I said, well, hate's too strong a word. We don't agree with their choices. Well, is it a choice? Is sexual preference really a choice? I think it's been pretty well proven. You don't have a choice. It's not a conscious choice, folks. It's genetics. I think that's been pretty well proven. In fact, President Obama, just in the last 2 days, although some of you may disagree with him too, he's saying we've got to like make a rule or regulation or pass a law or something that makes this trying to deprogram gay people, make those programs illegal, outlaw them, because it won't happen. It's torture. Because sexual preference is not a choice. Oh, you can say no to sex. There is sexual abstinence. Okay, you can always say no. But your basic sexual drives is something that's not a conscious choice. And I know some of you disagree or don't believe me, but that's what the science says. That's what the research says. And so Gary just probably forgot to go further because the group primarily brought together a lot of people from Access and, of course, religion or ethnic heritage. We're talking about people from the Middle East, and we're talking about the religion of Islam. Okay? So, of course, that's their primary message. But I think, Take on Hate should, if it's a national group, should be inclusive. No reason for anybody to hate anybody for any reason. There you go. I said it. I hope I didn't say it first. Somebody must have said that before. Historical Jesus? I don't know. Maybe. Moving on. Public service days have begun in Dearborn. That was last Monday. And what does that mean? Well, they've got a catchphrase for that. Yes, they do. It's called Carts Out, Cars In. Okay. The day that you put your trash, that's your cart, your trash barrels out, you know, the recyclable and the organic stuff. Those days are the days you don't park your car in front of your house. All right. And that's the way it used to be. But since the trash days are now starting with pickup of even organic waste, as well as the general trash. I'm thinking it's not organic. It's general trash. It's like things that can't be recycled as general trash. And then, of course, there's yard waste, which is like grass clippings and bush clippings, and that goes into separate, specially identified barrels, too. You know that here in Dearborn, that we divide our pickup barrels. But what's happened here, and I have a press release on this that you got to be careful of, is that the city of Dearborn has made giving tickets for people that don't take their trash back in and who put out inappropriate trash, they made it a little bit more expensive. Yes, they have. And here it is, starting May 3rd. So it's not coming up yet. You'll read the story probably in the papers over the next week or two locally, and you should subscribe to Dearborn Times Herald and Press and Guide. And both of them, I think. Hey, why? Because every week, I think I point out, the Times Herald has some stories that for some reason aren't in either one of the Press and Guide papers, or they have a different spin, a different take on them, you know, interviewing different people who have different ideas about these topics. So there's still a reason to get both papers. It doesn't cost that much. Come on. Weekly, anyway. So starting May 3rd, specific rule violations could cost a homeowner a minimum of $75 here in Dearborn. The new policy states when the city contractors cannot complete trash collection at a home because of a rule violation, they will leave a note to explain why. Materials remaining at the curb after collection day will be considered discarded, abandoned, and subject to abatement by the city without further notice. Now, by midnight of the trash day, residents of that home must remove the items that were left uncollected at the curb. So you get home that day. They didn't take something, didn't dump some barrels. You've got to get those barrels and the stuff they didn't take back behind your house or in your garage or somewhere, according to city regulations. Otherwise, you'll get the $75 minimum fine. However, if these special things can't be picked up by the city, you can then go and call the city for a special pickup. But a minimum fee of $55, minimum fee, depending on what it is they have to pick up, will apply to that special pickup. However, if a city neighborhood services inspector finds the material still at the curb the following day, the city will collect the items and without further notice will assess a minimum fee of $75 to the household in violation. So that's at least $25 more than the minimum. Again, these are minimums because it could be more depending on the quantity or size of what they can't normally pick up with the normal trash. So to avoid penalties, residents should pre-schedule special pickups. And there's a number, 313-943-2433. 943, by the way, is 313-943, is pretty much all the city of Dearborn phone numbers these days. And the last four numbers are 2433. That's to schedule special pickups of stuff that's too big or unusual to be picked up at your curb. Now, they will charge you, again, that minimum fee of $55. Could be more. And you can this sort of special pickup can be requested for excessive trash or recycling, yard waste, or bulk items. So yard waste could be, let's say, a tree. Oh, a whole tree was maybe had to be cut down and was not taken by the contractor who cut them down. Or maybe you cut it down yourself to save yourself having a tree specialist in to cut it down. By the way, that's very dangerous if it's a big tree. So, but if it's too big, they can't take it in the weekly pickup, and you'll have to get a special pickup scheduled. Now, residents may take items not collected at the curb to the DPW yard the third Saturday of every month for free disposal. The yard is just south of 94 off Greenfield, 2951 Greenfield. It's open from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. on that third Saturday of every month. Okay, but of course, you got to figure out some way to get that tree or whatever it is to them. So hopefully you've got a pickup truck or a big van or something, because if they don't pick up from the curb, you've got to get it down to them that way. Now, extraordinary large move-outs, excessive construction debris, or other items may not be eligible for city special pickups. Anyway, the reasons for all this, you might ask. Properly containing and setting out waste material ensures neighborhoods are kept safe and clean. Failure to follow city codes for waste disposal will result in sanitation collection notices of violation, and if not remediated, fines. I'll charge you money. The convenient curbside trash recycling, yard waste, and bulk collection is one reason neighborhoods in Dearborn have a reputation for being appealing and inviting. Yep. One of our local community activists, Mary Jo Duravage, keeping us informed about the Bryant Library and just reminding everybody that the parking behind the Bryant Library, parking lots, paid parking there, is over with. So come on down to Bryant Library and use all facilities as long as you want to. That's the same lot that's behind Buddy's Pizza and so on. And you know, don't park in Buddy's little private lot, but in the lot that used to require a charge. They haven't taken down the, I don't think yet, the little guard buildings at the entranceway, but the gates are down or up. They're not active anymore. So just pull right in there. Use Bryant Library if it's closer. I know Centennial always had free parking, but Bryant's a great little library. Also, you know, on May 8th, that Bryant Library lot is where the new year of the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market is going to be begin. So May 8th, okay? A little earlier than it has in the last couple of years. But there's stuff to buy, stuff to plant. Days are getting warmer. It's getting close. So by May 8th, we'll be ready for that. And, of course, it'll be taking up about half of that Bryant parking lot for the vendors for the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. But the rest of the lot will be free. And the next big lot down is free because there's no more paid parking for the big lots in Dearborn. She also wants me to tell you, and we'll try to remind you again in a couple of weeks, but Monday, April 27th at 6 p.m., one of the budget hearings, the fiscal year budget discussions of the city, we'll be talking about the museum and the libraries. And I have the updated schedule just from the city this week on that. And it looks like we've got to conclude with this story today. I'll try to squeak another story in as Joanne Korchinska is coming in for Highway 61, the Blues Show. It is WHFR Dearborn that you're listening to. So here's that updated budget discussion schedule. All the budget workshops for next year's budget in the city of Dearborn, the public is invited to attend. Council Conference Room 1A of the Dearborn Administrative Center, 16901 Michigan Avenue. Enter through the west entrance. Actually, it's the west entrance on the south side of the building. I don't believe there actually is a west entrance, but it's the westerly entrance. Anyway, I could be wrong. I looked for a door on the west side last time I was there for an open house and couldn't find it. When I went to State of the City address, it was the more west entrance on the south side of the Dearborn Administrative Center. Tuesday, April 14th, next week, they'll be talking about parking, downtown cleanup efforts. Monday, April 20th, infrastructure, that's the roads, folks. Yeah, and plumbing, and sewers, and so on. That's a real important big deal. Monday, April 27th, Library and Historical Museum. Monday, May 4th, Neighborhood Services, a rental property update, enforcement of commercial property. Wednesday, May 6th, swimming pools and potential plans for a specific city-owned property. There's also, they say, Monday, May 11th, to be announced, another topic. Always check at cityofdearborn.org in the transparency section. Hopefully, there's actually something there, or not something you just look right through. Okay, bad joke. Mary Jo Duravage recommends, always double-check with the city. You can call them even. Sometimes the website is not updated, as I've discovered in the past. But the people in the Public Information Office actually know about changes to meetings and schedules. But especially the one for the library and the museum is Monday, April 27th, 6 p.m. Let's see, anything quick here finishing up as Joanne gets her first CD queued up here for the Highway 61 Blues Show for today. You probably noticed you drove by the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. The city of Dearborn is filling in the pond in front, and that used to be called, when it was being built, when the building was being built, Lake Guido for the mayor.